You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 186 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman The Adventures Continues, issues number 1 and 2. Batwoman, Season 1, Episode 17, A Narrow Escape. Flash, Season 6, Episode 16, So Long and Goodbye. And Legends of Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 9, Zari, Not Zari. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, up first for DC news. DC has announced a revised shipping schedule for its upcoming print books with two new distributors, Lunar and UCS. These two newly created sister companies to longtime mail order comic giants Discount Comic Book Services, which is DCBS, and Midtown Comics, respectively. These two retailers are among the biggest direct market comic sellers, and Midtown has for years handled DC's subscription sales. Now, DC is supposed to start publishing new comics April 28th, which is already passed. And after surveying 2,000 North American stores, the publisher announced plans to resume releasing a trimmed-down line of titles, which will also be released simultaneously with the digital versions. So, that time has come and gone, but a lot of the stuff they've been putting out, they haven't been putting out too much new stuff yet, if you've noticed. If you checked our Facebook group, you'll see what I've actually posted a list of what's going to be coming out, so you can go on there and check that out. And it's slowly increasing, so. All right, up next for DC News, Lois Lane artist Mike Perkins has signed a new 3-year exclusive contract with DC. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's great. I don't really have much to say on that one. Yeah, it's good for him.
All right. Next up, Batman writer James Tynion IV has offered up new details when the DC flagship title will return, saying DC is planning a June release for Batman number 92 to maximize the number of stores able to sell physical copies. Still seems like a long way off to me, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense, too, because... We've touched on this in a couple of our previous podcasts, but it clearly seems like DC is trying their best not to screw over stores, because the easiest thing to do would be to just go digital, but then those comic book stores never get those sales, and I think in the long run you end up shooting yourself in the foot with that, because those are your best way to get physical copies out. So that's clearly what they're doing with this, and I think from that regard it makes total sense. And I think it's cool, like you said in one of the previous news pieces, the fact that they're surveying comic book stores trying to see what will work best. I know 200 is not a lot, but, you know, they could be making these decisions unilaterally.
It wasn't 200, it was 2,000.
2,000, sorry. Yeah, so yeah. Even more. Like, you know what I mean? But, like, that's a lot, but that's still not, you know, there are more than 2,000 comic book stores, but they don't have to do that. So it clearly shows that they are trying to, you know, figure out a way to make it work, and from that regard I think delaying Batman makes sense.
Yeah, it does. All right, up next, writer Tom King has revealed that he has almost completed work on the final issue of an unannounced limited series with artist Jorge Fornes Fornes drew several issues of King's recent Batman run. Excited to hear that he's got another miniseries in the work. So I'm sure they won't announce that until, you know, things are kind of probably back to normal.
Right. Yeah. I mean, on the bright side, if there were any miniseries that were kind of like in the oven when this all kind of happened, the artists have had a lot of time to get stuff done. That's all I'm saying. So it's possible we could be getting some miniseries that all, you know, that like much like the White Knight are able to ship consistently because they're just done.
Yeah.
That was honestly, I mean, we could talk about how good the story of White Knight was, but I love the fact that the creator made sure that he had it done first both times before it ever even started shipping. So there was never any danger of delays.
Yeah, like we've seen with, like we saw a Doomsday Clock.
Oh, my gosh. That had to have been more than one thing happening, though. That couldn't have been, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Had to have been, like, one thing happened, and then by the time whatever what that was causing that happened, something else started. That was ridiculous. I can't think of another comic. I mean, obviously, I'm relatively young, but I can't think of another comic that's had that sort of issue. And yet still getting done. I feel like most comics, if they have that big of shipping issues, they just get canceled.
Right.
At a certain point.
It was a great story. Oh, they should have waited and just put it out all at once, but or not at once, but you know what I mean. Had it finished before they put it out.
Yeah, I mean, clearly. Which is, I mean, it's a shame too. I'm sure the sales on it got hurt by the end because people forgot about it.
Yeah.
It was such a good series. I would imagine that if that's coming out every month, it becomes, you know, like some of these really popular miniseries that we've seen, that the sales get big towards the end because people are into it and it's a consistent thing they know is coming. I don't know. I should have done my homework and looked at what the numbers are, but I can't imagine that it did as well as it would have had it shipped consistently.
Yeah. All right. Next up for DC News, The Batman starring Robert Pattinson has been moved from June 25th, 2021 to October 1st, 2021. No big surprise there. A lot of movies have been being pushed back.
I don't know that I even feel confident that that's when it will actually release either. That's assuming, I mean, you know what I mean? Because that's assuming that they will get back and able to finish filming. We don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's, all of those movies are, I think, really up in the air. The one thing that's nice is that I feel confident we will see Wonder Woman at some point because that was actually at least filmed.
Yeah.
I assume it's going to come out in theaters, but whether it has a, you know, somewhat short theatrical run or not, I think will depend on the world. But it is, I mean, I believe somewhat relieved. We will still at least get that movie, that Batman movie, man. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked that ends up being a 2022 movie.
Yeah, nothing's going to surprise me at this point.
Yeah.
All right, up next for DC News, the three core characters of the long-running Superman prequel show Smallville are reuniting online with fans for a charitable cause. Tom Welling, Kristen Kreuk, and Michael Rosenbaum are taking part in a virtual Smallville reunion via Omaze to benefit the Los Angeles Ronald McDonald House. The cast announced that they will reunite in a private reunion event for a lucky randomized sweepstakes winner. And you can find all the details of the Smallville reunion over on Omaze. And the winner will be announced June 10th. So somebody's gonna get lucky.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's
cool. That's pretty cool. Good for them.
Up next for DC News, Netflix's Lucifer Season 6 is in trouble due to the fact that there are possible contract disputes between star Tom Ellis and the studio. And I have not heard anything else on this, whether it's been resolved since I've seen this news or anything. So,
yeah, I've seen a couple articles on this, and I hope they get it worked out. I would honestly would be surprised if they don't. I understand the dude wanting to renegotiate, and I actually do think he has a foot to stand on with that because he is the show. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's – I don't know if you've seen if you've ever gotten around to seeing any of it, but I mean, he's entirely why that show is successful. Other characters on the show are good, don't get me wrong, but it's just, I honestly think even if you have the same script, which I think is usually pretty funny, and you put another dude in it, I don't know that it's as good. Like, they've really cast the perfect guy. So from that regard, I do think he has a foot to stand on in terms of holding out for a good deal. But I also, like, I think it would be silly for him to, you know, let it go completely. He hasn't really done a whole lot else up to this point in his career. Obviously, this, I would assume, have opened up some doors, but still.
Yeah,
I think ultimately it'll get worked out.
I'm still a slacker. I haven't watched it yet.
It's pretty funny. It's not a brilliant HBO masterpiece by any means, but it's very entertaining. Tom Ellis is so perfect in that role. And there are, every once in a while, you do get an episode. There's a few there, of course. There's a time loop episode, and you know me. That one is, I think, a legitimately great episode. I actually think I shouted out about it on the podcast probably like 70 episodes ago. That I thought was a real, like, actual great piece of television. But most of them are just, you know, fun. They're fun. So if you're looking for something to kind of binge while you've got a lot of time on your hands, I would recommend checking out that show, especially since it's on Netflix, and it possibly is getting a sixth season. I think likely. I think pretty likely.
All right. Up next for DC News, HBO Max orders a Justice League Dark series from Bad Robot. Live action Justice League Dark series. That's cool.
Yeah. I wonder if this is going to end up taking some of what they were going to plan to do with the movie that never happened.
That could be.
It's possible. It may not be. It may just not be connected at all. Just apart from the fact that it's the same team. But
you know, doing it as a series might be smarter than doing it as a movie.
I would agree with that. You know, because I think one problem, especially with doing a team movie, we saw it with Justice League, for example, is if you haven't established them beforehand, you have to spend so much time setting them all up that you don't have a lot of time to actually tell the movie, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think a TV series in that regard is, I think, better suited for something like this. I also, as we've seen in the comics, I think they're really well suited to an episodic thing. I'm sure it'll be serialized, but I think that sort of magical threat-based team, I think, is better suited to television style instead of just dealing with one major threat for a movie.
And if they take mere material from the current Justice League Dark series, that would work real well during the series, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm very excited to see what they come up with. If it's anything similar to what we got with Swamp Thing, I think it would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I can't imagine Wonder Woman being on the team, though.
No. No, there's no way. Well, especially if it's DC, you know, like, they just won't. The fact that she's super successful in films right now, that we will never see her on TV for like a decade.
That's just
sad. I would love to be wrong about that. By the way, I would be happy for us to replay that clip with me being wrong, but DC's track record is that when a character is successful, we're not letting them do anything else. Because God forbid we double dip on success.
No kidding. And have a great leader for the Justice League Dark.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I think her presence in the comic is really one of the things that makes it great.
Yeah, she's a great leader of that team.
I think, and it's nice because I think it makes it an unquestionable character to focus around. I think sometimes when you get a team and it's a bunch of, like, for lack of a better term, B and C listers, it sort of becomes, I think, more of a personal taste. Like, oh, should they center on Constantine? Should it be Zatanna? But, like, if Wonder Woman's on the team, obviously it circles around Wonder Woman. I think that makes it easier to focus the story.
Right. And the thing about Wonder Woman is she's not as dark as some of the other characters. So she's a brighter character, but, you know, she has roots in magic. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up for our next bit of DC news, Geoff Johns is set to produce a new Green Lantern HBO Max series. DC TV producer Greg Berlanti and Berlanti Productions are going to be heavily involved. Two different Green Lanterns are set to be featured along with series favorite villain Sinestro.
I wonder if they're going to start with Green Lantern Sinestro. I would like that. And I think, honestly, it makes sense. My frustration with that is that both the movie, which obviously we know how that went, and then the animated series, which is very good, both start with Green Lantern Sinestro with the idea of working up to Yellow Lantern Sinestro. And they never get there. The movie, because it didn't do well. And then the show, because Cartoon Network, was for whatever reason, was on the warpath with DC animated shows. So I can't help but worry that we're going to get round three. We're going to get Sinestro sort of work. I don't know. I can't help but imagine that the first season is somewhat going to be following the downfall of Sinestro. And maybe that's not the case, but I can see them doing that.
Yep.
And then for whatever reason, season two doesn't get made. And it's a yet another
okay,
half-baked Sinestro story.
First off, we have Jeff Johns behind this. Second of all, we have Greg Berlanti behind this.
Okay, so technically both of them were involved in the movie. I do want to point that out. Berlanti also was involved in that train wreck.
Oh, man.
An often forgot fact, but he was there.
Yeah, they may have their hands in there. I have a feeling more hands were in that than should have been.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
But
there's no question.
But Green Lantern's better suited for a television series anyways, in my opinion. I mean, you can really build up the characters. You can have the slow burn of the story, which we've seen Jeff Johns do time and time again. I don't know. I'm excited about it. I got a more positive outlook than I do a negative outlook at this point.
My hope is that since it's HBO, it's going to have a better budget. Because I do think the one thing is that I think Green Lantern suffers greatly if you try and do him low budget. Because it just looks dumb.
Yeah, you're right. It does.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not that the movie was low, but it was definitely not low budget. But the effects didn't look that way for the most part. And so, I don't know. I'm excited for that. And I really hope it's good. But I'm also I'm scarred, Drew. They've hurt me before.
All right. Well, I'll try to keep your spirits lifted up. All right. Next for DC News. John Cryer revealed that the writers of Supergirl are currently rewriting parts of the season 5 finale. Oh, this is what John had to say. The Supergirl folks have talked to me because we couldn't shoot our last episode. We had shot some of the last episode, and they were going to use some of that footage, but they're writing a whole bunch of new stuff around it, which is interesting because the way my character was thwarted now doesn't happen anymore. So I was like, oh, did I get defeated? Wait a minute, I like this. Supervillains, we relish our chance to actually not be defeated every now and then. So it sounds like they're changing up the ending for whatever reason. And who knows when we'll see that.
Yeah. And am I correct in saying they're doing fewer episodes than originally planned?
I don't know because I haven't heard any announcements.
We know Flash is, right?
I don't know for that for sure on that either.
I thought I had seen something that said Flash was going to have a truncated season.
That could be. That could be not. I haven't really seen anything definite yet. It's just things are just kind of in limbo.
Without knowing for sure whether the season's going to be short or not, I think we're going to end up seeing this with almost all the shows, to be honest. Black Lightning and Arrow are going to end up being the only two shows that actually went from start to finish the way they were originally intended to.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see. It feels like Flash got more episodes done than Supergirl and Batwoman and stuff. But we'll see what they do. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be seeing all the rest of the series that are left to see. So
I think it's going to be interesting to look back on and see what they were going to do with these shows and where they ended up going. And I wonder hope I wonder how, if that's going to be a negative thing or not. I'm curious.
I'm curious too. All right, and for my last bit of DC news, on Michael Rosenbaum's Inside of You, Grant Gustin said that his talks to renegotiate his contract for future seasons had been stalled due to the pandemic. And this is what he had to say. He said the conversations actually had started already for adding a potential 8th and 9th season, but then the pandemic happened and everything stopped. That's kind of cool. They were going to extend it out to potential 8th and 9th season.
I would take that as encouraging news, honestly, because that suggests that he was interested in doing that, as opposed to what we clearly saw. Amell was done, right?
Yeah.
And you could kind of tell in some of his talking about it beforehand that he seemed like he was close to the end. So I don't know. I mean, obviously it's a bummer it's not done, you know, set in stone. But to me, I would take that as a positive. Like, yeah. It, you know what I mean? Like, there's a desire on both sides to continue. And it took a, you know, unprecedented world event for it not to get done. So.
Yeah, we'd probably be announcing the news already.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. You're exactly right. I'm pretty confident that had nothing happened, we would already, honestly, we'd already know.
Yeah. So, but that's good that the potential's there. And we'll probably learn something later on after, you know, things get back to normal.
Yeah. And I mean, and obviously this could have changed perspectives. That's certainly possible, but I don't know. I still interpret that as mainly good news.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
We are Nerdlanta.
We got these filters. I think they're called pee poppers. That's
for popping peas.
Yeah. For popping all the peas.
Sweaty balls and pee poppers. Always in time.
Can a podcast be a reboot?
Oh, God, absolutely. Yes.
The next generation.
Yes.
That's awesome.
We are highly confident at a late hour.
You know, it's just always fun to talk about geeky stuff.
And Nerdlanta is the place to do it.
I guess that's it. We played the promo.
Okay. That was an awesome promo.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we got to let you know there's going to be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Batman. The adventure continues. Issues number 1 and number 2. This comic is the further adventures of Batman the Animated Series. In comic book form. The first issue, I thought, was a fun issue to read and kind of brought me back into the world of Batman the Animated Series. And as I was reading it, I was even hearing the actors' voices in my head. So it took a little bit to get back into that. And then when I started reading, I was like hearing the different voices as I was reading it. I like the fact that the art style was basically the same as the animated series.
Yeah, I agree with that. The art was replicating the style very well.
Yeah. So the issue opens up with what I think was an unnecessary short battle with Bane. In my opinion, the first 3 pages we could have kind of left out, and we could have just started with the robot. So we have a robot break into Wayne Tech and steals alien tech that Superman gave to Bruce for testing at Wayne Enterprises. So Bruce Wayne goes to some social shindig, and we see him talking with his old flame, Veronica Vreeland. And we find out that Tim Drake is Bruce's current ward, which I'm hoping we see him sometime during the story. We also see Lex Luthor shows up and makes some small talk with Bruce Wayne. We find out that Superman is not on Earth and is kind of MIA. And nobody's seen him since the big battle he had on the far side of the moon. That evening, Batman tracks down the robot And while investigating the robot, Lex Luthor shows up in his armor and battles Batman. So that's my summary of issue number one. The adventure continues number two. This issue opens up with Lex Luthor having Batman in his grasp. We learn that the alien tech that Luthor stole was actually Brainiac's head, but it was only an empty shell. The programming got downloaded somewhere in space. We see Batman escapes Lex Luthor and returns to the Batcave, where he gets his Iron Man version of the Batsuit. Batman goes after Lex's plane, and Lex uses the big robot from the first issue to battle Batman. Batman uses kryptonite, frees Superman that he's figured out was trapped in that robot suit because Lex was using him as a battery. And then we see Superman stops Lex and Mercy and destroys the robots in the sun. So that pretty much sums up the two issues. Nothing real serious, but it is a fun read.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed the Bane intro initially, but then, as you say, ultimately it had nothing to do with the story, which honestly wouldn't have been a problem, except it then was trying to tell one longer story. You know what I mean? I think it would have been fine. I thought, based on the first few pages, it was going to just be like almost like a nightly patrol thing, where we just see him take down a couple different random villains. And that would be the comic. And then from that regard, the Bane scene is fine. But like you said, it doesn't really fit, because that's not ultimately what the comic is about.
No, and he took him down in like, it was like really quick. I think it was three pages.
It reminded me a little of one of the other Batman shows, Brave and the Bold, that very frequently the pre-opening credit scene had nothing to do with the rest of the episode. I don't know how much of that show you've seen, but it would start with like a 5-minute battle and potentially a team up with an entirely different hero, and then the credits would start the show, and then the main episode would be like him taking on a completely different villain with a teaming up with a completely different hero.
Now the Batman Brave and the Bold, I haven't really seen much of that series.
I highly recommend it. It's obviously it's not the same as Batman the Animated Series, but I think they're both phenomenal shows in their own regard.
I'll have to check it out. I think I checked it out at one point. It was like, this isn't the same as the animated series, and I stopped.
No, it's a lot more. It's definitely very much more tongue in cheek, but you get such a great slice of DC characters with it, and still telling like Batman is still very much the main character of the stories. So
that's probably something I would like. I just have to recheck it out, I'm sure.
Anyway, going back to this comic, I thought it was fun. I'm glad that we reviewed issues one and two together, because there's not enough, honestly, in my opinion, there's not enough in a single issue. It would have felt, hollow, I guess. I don't know how to put it. There was just not a lot of meat on the bone for a single issue of a comic. Because while the art is fantastic, there's so little going on each page, because the panels are huge. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, again, well drawn, but they're taking up so much space. I'm assuming because they're trying to, fill the story, like make it a 22-page story, despite the fact that it's maybe a 10-page story. And so these panels are really stretching out the story to make it fit the size of a comic. When I really think this is not a 2-issue story.
Yeah,
much absolutely could have fit this into one issue, honestly not gotten rid of any of the details. Told the entire story with all of the panels that were drawn, and you just make them a little bit smaller, I guarantee you could fit that into a 22-page comic. There's just not a lot going on. I agree. I mean, it's very enjoyable. It was pleasant. Just a very light comic. Certainly nothing that's going to be, intellectually challenging.
Yeah, it was definitely written for a younger audience, I think. That's what it felt like to me. I quite enjoyed it. It was a lighter take than what we normally review.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, I got to ask you, at the end of issue 2, we see a guy who's standing in the alley for over an hour. Do you think that was Jason Todd? Because that's what I got the feeling was.
I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be Jason Todd.
He had this weird white stripe going through his hair. I'm like, is that Jason Todd? That was the vibe I was getting, but I wasn't sure because I don't ever remember seeing him in Batman the Animated Series.
I almost wonder if that's the point that we've skipped ahead to the point where Tim Drake is the Robin.
Okay. Wasn't Tim Drake Robin in the old animated series? I can't even remember now.
I think he does become Robin at some point. I will admit I have seen way less of that series than a lot of other people, but I'm pretty sure Nightwing gets established at some point in that, so it would require there to have been a second Robin.
Yeah. I just can't remember if they had the details of it. And maybe I need to go back and revisit. Well, I had started revisiting the animated series, and I got sidetracked from it and haven't got back to it yet.
See, now that's the one interesting thing, because for most of that comic, I would agree it felt like it was for a younger audience. But then that last panel wasn't, I don't think it was. Nope. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it did.
It had a kind of a confused tone.
Yeah.
In that regard.
And I know this series is supposed to continue sometime, but I haven't seen when the issue number 3 comes out yet.
Probably not for a while.
that could possibly be. But it was nice they released these pretty much back to back. So.
Yeah, I agree. And I honestly, I think that's a smart thing. Because like I said, I don't think that one issue of this would have been enough, in my opinion. I think together, I really liked the story, and I think I enjoy it a lot more because we happen to read both of them. I don't know that I would have reviewed it as nicely if we had only read one, because just so little relatively happens in a single issue.
This is all we've gotten so far, at least up to what we're reviewing now. So next week we'll have some more, a few more comics, I think. So, but yeah, it's. Reading comics has been bare pickings for new stuff. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
You know how Disney kind of like puts films on an assembly line, but you know that when you're getting something from Pixar, because it takes so long to craft, that there's a lot of care put into it.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmos Show.
And the PCC Multiverse.
Playing worldwide on radio 7 days a week, your favorite podcast app, and right here on the ESO Network.
And we're back. Let's talk Batwoman, Season 1, Episode 17, A Narrow Escape. In this episode, Kate struggles to move forward after putting her sister in prison the last episode, and killing Cartwright 2 episodes ago. Her own fear and trauma are keeping her from putting on the Batwoman suit, and we see she has many panic attacks during this episode.
So many.
Yes. A villain named the Detonator returns to Gotham. He is testing people throughout Gotham to see who really is a hero and who is a coward. And how does this test work? He straps a bomb to his victim and tells them they can either allow the timer to tick down and die, or press a button and it destroys a building somewhere, killing other people. We see his first victim is a GCPD officer who chooses to save his own life at the expense of others. The second victim we see is not so quick to press the button and allows the crows to kind of sweep in and evacuate people out of the area. And then the third victim we see is Jacob Kane. And, of course, when that happens, the Wayne building is the one that's rigged to explode. We find out that the Detonator is a crow, and not just any crow, but the crow who staged Lucius Fox's murder.
And also a copycat, importantly. He's using the Detonator's method to cover up his own crimes.
Yes. It turns out that Lucius wasn't supposed to die, but he refused to hand over a notebook full of Wayne Tech plans. So when Luke was threatened, Lucius rushed the person threatening him and was shot and killed. The detonator wasn't even in charge of that operation. He was working for Tommy Elliott, who we know was currently locked up in Arkham. We see Alice and Mouse clash with Tommy during this episode, and Alice attempts a plot to escape, maybe take over Arkham. Now, one of the things I wanted to see if you noticed, they said the Joker's name this week in the episode. When Luke told Kate that Batman killed the Joker, if you remember, I think it was during Crisis, one of the episodes where they had the Joker, they wouldn't mention his name in it.
Yeah, it was interesting. They did finally mention it, only to be like, and he's dead. I honestly, part of me almost wish they had just not mentioned it at all, because then it raises the question of, well, what about all of the other major villains? Like, yeah, Joker hasn't popped back up, but Riddler, did Batman also kill him? Penguin, did Riddler, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It opens up a can of worms, whereas if you just don't mention any of them, you just can just, I don't know, out of sight, out of mind, I guess.
Yeah. Does it feel
like... Plus, I really am not a huge fan of committing to Batman killing the Joker, but that's... What are you going to do?
Yeah, I'm not either, but let's not go into that. Did it feel like they're trying to make Tommy Elliott come back as a major villain for the end of the season?
I don't think so. See, I was very disappointed with how the whole Lucius Fox murder thing ended up playing out. I thought that was going to be a longer story. And then it turns out that the conspiracy is really just this crackpot villain that we got at the beginning of the season. And it, as if to reinforce that, we got another glimpse. They did manage to have Tom in this one, and he's so lame. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. They would have to completely reinvent that character.
Yeah, but it felt like they were trying to do that. But
did he, though? But, like, what they actually did with him in this episode did not seem to me to be building up him as any level of threat.
Yeah, I guess that...
You know what I mean? Like, in the past, they certainly built up what he was doing in the past. But then in the episode itself, like, he's just another loon at Arkham.
Yeah, I guess you're right about that. Because, you know, Alice is the smart one here who's working on taking over Arkham.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's completely, he belongs there. The mental state that Tommy is in, he belongs at Arkham. It's, I don't know. I just found that very dissatisfying when it was like, oh yeah, I was working for Tommy Elliott. I think that would have been a great reveal if Tommy Elliott had been a bigger villain. I think that was the bigger problem, was that the episode that they had him in, he was boring. He didn't do anything.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because that's the thing, if you think about it, if you think about the episode where he was the villain, and how easily and how he was taken down and how lame his plot was, and realized that in actuality he had all of these other things working for him, and it only amounted to that. He literally had a dude in the Crows roughing up Lucius Fox, and it just amounted to him stealing a gun. That was it? That was the master plan? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, That's the sort of thing. It's like you're trying to, it was like they were trying to retroactively make him a bigger threat in that episode, but he wasn't. Like, you can't unring the bell that they rung with that. I don't understand. I think on paper, it would be a great idea. This is why I still am so baffled at why they decided to do that in the first place. That episode to me was so disappointing. And we talked about it when the episode came out, because it was like I don't see how you can come back from that. You have to reinvent. It's like Arrow when they had to come out with a second version of Vertigo.
Yeah.
Because the first one was so ridiculous.
and they still never really got Vertigo right the same way he is in the comics, but still, the second one was still at least better. Tommy Elliott, they're going to have to do, not necessarily, obviously you can't I mean, yes, you could recast the character, but you would have to make him a doctor, and he's not a doctor in this. That's the thing. Like, they would have to completely rewrite that character.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? Like, the easy way out to recast the character would require him to be the surgeon that he is in the comics, but he's not. He's just a real estate. He's just a rich kid in the show. And it was just I was so surprised that they resolved that this episode, and then that they resolved it in such a letdown. I couldn't believe that that was the answer. Like, that was the whole, they've been working on this conspiracy, Drew, for like 6 or 7 episodes now, right?
It's been a while.
And it turned out it was just a crow working for Tommy Elliott? Really? That was the answer the whole time? Like, that's unbelievable to me. And also, not to mention, on top of that, the other thing that was I don't know if you noticed this frustrated me instantly, is the need, all they needed to do was to not have Luke Fox say Bruce was obsessed over finding the detonator. Take that line out. If it's not in there, Kate solving who the detonator is in 5 minutes is fine, because it seems really obvious. Like, she's like, oh, this is a military code. And this guy is obviously the only one that fits that profile. Like, there's no question. I've solved this case in 5 minutes. And Bruce was, according to Luke, obsessed with this case and couldn't solve it.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, does it?
But you know, I was like, why? Just don't have that line. And it's fine. Like, Kate solving it in 5 minutes makes sense. Like, her solving the case made sense. It made total sense why she would know what that number was. But why? Why? That's the same thing I say so frequently with Supergirl. It's like, why do you have to do this? Why do you have to be like, look, see how much better she is than the other guy? Why? What was, like, to what end? All that did to me was make a question like, what the hell was Bruce doing? If she could solve it in 5 minutes, I even can buy into her solving it faster than him. I can totally buy that. But him obsessed over it and unable to solve it, and she looks at a piece of paper for 5 minutes and solves it? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from there. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Flash, Season 6, Episode 16, So Long and Good Night. The episode begins at Joseph Carver's home, where the leader of Black Hole hires Ragdoll to kill Joe West. Ragdoll's first attempt to kill is when he climbs inside of Joe's car engine and prevents Joe from braking and forces his car to accelerate until Joe has no other option but to bail out before it crashes and explodes. My question, how did Ragdoll get out of there before that car exploded?
I don't know. That was unclear to me. It almost seemed to imply that he was impervious to that damage, which then is confusing why he was trying to kill himself with the bomb later. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. So that was...
That's a great question.
I was wondering that. I'm like, wait a minute, how did he get out of there? All right. We have Ragdoll's second attempt on Joe is when he is questioning Sunshine. Ragdoll creepily crawls out of an evidence box and tries to kill Joe. And, of course, Barry speeds into the precinct in time to save Joe. And, unfortunately, Barry fails to stop one of the bullets. The thing I didn't remember when I was doing my notes for this, one of the things I didn't remember was, how did Barry know that Ragdoll was there? Did we see something and I just forgot? Because when Barry comes rushing in, I'm like, how did Barry know Ragdoll was there?
Good question.
That was my second flaw I saw. Maybe I'd see the answer if I went back and watched it a second time. But
I don't think so. I think it's almost like the show forgets that they're not the audience.
So that was the second flaw I saw.
Like, Barry's just sitting there watching the Flash TV show. I was like, oh, I got you, Joe.
And then
maybe Joe hits his warning thing. I don't know.
I don't remember seeing him do that, but
that might be the unspoken implication there, yeah. I assume.
Yeah, that could be. All right, and for Ragdoll's third attempt, he does the obvious thing and kidnaps Cecile in order to lure Joe out. We see Barry goes to head-to-head with Ragdoll without his speed, while Joe goes searching for Cecile. He finds her strapped to a pressure bomb, and when Nash fails to help him disarm the bomb, Joe does the valiant thing and takes Cecile's place on the chair. And once Barry handles Ragdoll, Jordan orders Barry to speed Cecile safely away, even though he knows Barry doesn't have enough speed to come back and save him, which Barry tries to do anyways. And when he returns, he discovers that Joe has managed to disarm the bomb. And I thought that was kind of awesome for Joe to save himself. This near-death experience convinces Joe that he needs to go into witness protection to save his family. And we see Barry tries to call Iris before Joe leaves, but she doesn't answer. And then this turns into a big old fight with Barry and Iris at the end, with Iris acting not Iris-like. And we see she kicks him out, and it's just hard to believe that Barry hasn't figured out that something is off with Iris.
So, my girlfriend ranted about that. She is unbelievably frustrated with the Iris storyline at this point. She's like, Iris is so out of character at this point. How has Barry not figured it out?
I know.
Like, that's so, her argument is so irrational.
It is.
It's so extreme. And the whole episode, I want to be clear. It makes sense why villainous Iris would be saying all of those things. So the logic there makes sense. Why she's doing those things. She's trying to push Barry over the edge, and she's doing a phenomenal job. I get that. But it's also wildly out of character for Iris.
Yes. And there's two things that's very out of character for Iris. Number one, she would want her father in witness protection to keep him safe. Two, she wouldn't want Barry excessively using his speed force. And we see her actively trying to get him to use his speed force. Of course, we know why she's trying to do that. But you would think something would click with Barry. And it's just weird that it hasn't.
Well, to be fair, the show does have Barry at least give a look. At least the one time when she makes we've both lost our parents now. He looks at her like, what did you just say? Like, that's so patently absurd. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Both of your parents were murdered. My dad's still very much alive, but we've both lost our parents now. It's like, what? So Barry at least does give a look to that line, which is good. But like, how is that not like a ding, 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 ding?
Yeah, no kidding.
Something ain't right here. And again, I totally get why fake Iris is saying these things. It is perfectly in line with what she was trying to do. It doesn't make sense. Like what you're saying, and what my girlfriend is very frustrated with, is how Barry hasn't seen through it yet.
Yeah. So we see Singh return to his car, looks in his rearview mirror, and tells Ava that Joe has been taken off the board. In other words, Singh is actually Mir Singh, which raises so many questions.
When? How?
Yeah, exactly.
I gotta say though, I was really relieved to see that scene because they kept trying to like lightly hint that maybe he was up to something, that maybe he was a dirty cop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was so weird because they wouldn't fully commit to it. And it was really, honestly, it was starting to get a little frustrating because like he'd go in and make some demand of Joe and Joe would be like, no. And he'd be like, yeah, you're right. Let's just go with it. Every time that happened, I swear to God, at least 7 or 8 times where he'd be like, Joe, you can't do this. Joe, I'm going to do it. Okay, yeah, you have my full support. You're going to do it. It's like, what? At some point, be the boss. It kept happening. It was I don't know if they realized that they kept doing it. But man, seriously, 7 or 8 times he would come in with some order. Joe would just immediately disagree with it. And he would immediately be like, yeah, you're right, Joe. So honestly, I was honestly relieved when it was revealed he was a mirror version. Because I was like, oh, thank God.
At least we can stop, like, you know what I mean? Like, at least we can stop pretending now.
Yes.
It was so, it's just odd the way they were approaching him.
The other thing.
The scene, one scene I wanted to talk about that really didn't make sense to me, when Joe goes to confront the CEO, what's his name?
Joe Carver.
Why doesn't he have him killed? He's right there. He's got multiple armed bodyguards. He just says, like, I'm untouchable. If I want you dead, you're going to die. Have your bodyguard shoot him. He's right there. He's right there, Drew.
I know. It didn't make much sense, did it?
I mean, it was like he's acting. It makes it's fine. Like, if you don't call attention to it, you might not notice. You might not think about it. But he's calling attention to the fact that he wants Joe dead and very much has an easily obtainable way of getting that accomplished. It just lets him walk away. Like, Joe puts his hands up like, I'm going to walk away. And everybody just silently is like, yes, this is the right call for everybody involved in this situation. That's the thing that blows my mind. It's like, when Joe puts his arms up, it's like, oh, yeah, obviously we'll let you go. Even though I want you dead, and I still absolutely have an assassin out for you, I'll just let you go now.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That was ridiculous. He's literally talking about how he's untouchable, like the law can't touch him, which is true.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true.
I thought Joe was dumb to be going there in the first place.
I agree, but what better way to highlight that than, like, you can have Joe escape. I'm not saying that he has to succeed in killing Joe, but he could at least have his guys start shooting at him, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't need Joe to die, but you could emphasize how dumb that was of Joe to go there alone by having the guy go like, oh, thank you for delivering yourself to me. Shoot him, please.
It's funny, though, how Joe is usually, for everybody around him, he wants to be protective of, but Joe always seems to rush into things sometimes without thinking.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
Because sometimes I think he thinks he's invincible. All right. Another thing I wanted to talk about, we kind of finally start to see what Eva is after, which is revenge on her husband. But all this elaborate planning and stuff she's doing doesn't make sense for that motive, I don't think. What are your thoughts on that?
Go on.
Go
on. Let's get a Drew rant here.
Oh, okay. But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying is they reveal that her motive is revenge on her husband, but what does this have to do with involving Iris and all this other stuff that's going on with Joe? It didn't fully make sense to me.
I think she's trying to get other players off the board, is what it seems like. It also looks like she can't. When he said, so what's interesting, and I'm very curious to find out more, when he, because he obviously he makes this point of he's untouchable, but then he says literally at the end, like, she's not able to, like, pull him through the mirror. So it makes it sound like he's also got some meta thing going on, right?
I get that's possible, but we haven't
that seen seemed him. To be right. Yes, we haven't seen it, but that seemed to be the implication in that last scene between the two of them. When he's like, literally, I think he literally is untouchable for what, I don't know what that means exactly. And I'm curious to see, because when they put their hands up, like, she should in theory just yank him through the mirror, but it's strongly implied that she can't do that. And so I wonder if she's trying, not only is she getting people off the board, but I wonder if she needs certain things to literally be able to touch him, right? To be able to enact whatever.
Yeah. Because she's clearly trapped on the other side of the mirror.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see when they finally show us the origin of what happened.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how this season's going to end up playing out. Like I said, I'm fairly certain that it's been truncated. And I wonder if we're just like, are they going to cut the fat? You know what I mean? Like, were there a couple filler episodes they won't show? Or are we just going to lose out on a little bit of story?
I hope not. This has been such a good second half of the season. It'd be sad that we got the Bloodwork story complete and not this really good story.
You're so right, though.
All right. There's one other part of the story we haven't talked about that, and that's Ralph and Sisko team up to track down Sue. We find out that Black Hole is currently blackmailing Sue's parents. Sue agrees to let Ralph help her take on Black Hole. And not only that, but Sue also admits that she felt bad about tricking him during their last encounter. I'm already hearing those wedding bells.
One can dream.
Yep. So, I'm anxious to get more Ralph and Sue storyline. And I hope that's not one of the episodes that we're not going to get.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I very much look forward to getting more of them next season, hopefully.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Well, we've definitely got at least 3 or 4 more issues of The Flash we'll be talking about. So, a lot of time for stuff to happen. All right, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Legends Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 9, Zari, Not Zari. I love that title.
Yeah, it's good.
Sarah, Charlie, and Constantine travel to Vancouver to recover a piece of the Loom of Fate, hidden there on the set of another CW show, Supernatural. We find out that Sarah is a huge fan of the show and that Jason Ankles, Dean Winchester, is her hall pass. Found that funny. So
I gotta say, I wonder if something fell through on this episode. Like, they were supposed to get more of a crossover between them.
That's,
don't you? Because initially it was pretty good. It seemed like it was setting up for some sort of payoff. I thought there was supposed to be some sort of payoff towards the end of the episode, and there never really was.
Right.
It set up that premise, which I thought was very funny. And especially, like you mentioned, the first couple jokes and stuff, and there's a few other things where they get into that are funny, like who's filming season 15 or whatever. But then they never really pay it off. Part of me wonders if there was supposed to be something else and then it didn't happen.
Yeah, that's very possible, because it was set up that way.
Yeah, I don't know. It ended up feeling very half-baked. It was, I think, a very good idea. I think a very funny idea with a lot of potential, and they just didn't really, in my opinion, they didn't really capitalize on it that much. They had a couple really good jokes, but they just forget the premise at a certain point.
Right. So Atropos, I think that's how you pronounce her name, Charlie's sister, tracks them down, takes out Constantine, disguises herself as Constantine, and then we get an awesome fight scene between Sarah and her. Sarah survives seeing Atropos' true form, which should have killed her. Does this mean Sarah has some sort of new superpower? Or does it have to do with the fact that she died during Arrow? I was wondering that when I saw that scene.
My assumption is it's that because she died?
Yeah, I was wondering that too. It's either that, or she's gained some new ability, or has some new ability. Or maybe she has the ability because she died. I don't know.
I don't know. My assumption is that it's not a new ability, but I obviously could be wrong because the show does not elaborate.
No, but they're at least hinting at something going on with Sarah. So Atropos boards the Wave Rider to take the ring that was recovered from Shakespeare, and Barad. How do you pronounce his name? Barad. I don't know. Anyways, he tries to defend the ring and his sister Zari, but Atropos kills him. Sarah gets Gideon to open the door, and Charlie cuts off her hand, throwing Atropos out of time and leaving the pieces of the loom on the floor of the Wave Rider. We also see that Ava talks Mick into going back in time to be there for parts of her daughter's life, to try and change history and be involved with her. Love the scene where Mick takes his daughter trick-or-treating and they're dressed as Heatwave and Captain Cold.
That was amazing. That was a great scene. That was another one that didn't end, you know what I mean? Like, it was, that was, like, I thought, a fantastic subplot for the episode, and then they just didn't resolve it.
They didn't. I was disappointed because we didn't get to see the scene of Mick apologizing to her daughter. They just kind of cut it off, and we assume he did it. I think.
Or is that supposed to come next episode? Like, they had to have filmed that, right? The only thing I can imagine is that it's meant to be next episode, that they're going to do it more. Like, they could have done it this episode, but it would have been a short scene, and maybe they wanted to do more.
That could be.
Because otherwise, if they did film it, why would that be the scene you cut?
I know. It didn't make sense. Didn't make sense to me. I was disappointed. So I hope you're right. I hope we see it next episode, but I'm not holding my breath because it felt like we were supposed to assume that they made up. It felt like
that's a huge assumption. We've not seen them be like we've not seen the daughter be cordial to him yet once. And so to just leave it be an unwritten assumption that they work it out. You know what I mean? That was so weird because I really very much liked that whole subplot. I really liked it. And then they just didn't resolve it. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Especially because the last scene for that subplot is him going back to the house. Like, that's such an open-ended scene. How is that what you end on?
Yeah. Maybe you're right. Maybe they're going to resolve it next issue.
I hope so. It's honestly, that's more of a hope just because it doesn't really make sense that that's how you would leave that story.
Yeah.
I also hope Zari's brother does come back. I enjoy his character. I very much enjoyed his addition to the team. But I don't – we've already seen the version of Zari that wants to get her brother back. Like, I don't need to get version 2.0 of that.
To me, it felt like they were done with his character and we're not going to be seeing him again. That's what it felt like to me.
Probably right. That's such a bummer because, like, that's just – we're just microwaving leftovers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we've seen that Zari plot that was finally resolved, and they're like, how do we fill this season? We got anything left in the fridge? Zari? Okay. Like, I don't know.
We have to be getting new characters next season. Because, I don't know, it feels like some of the stuff is being run through again. You know what I mean?
But it shouldn't take – see, you're probably right, but it shouldn't be that hard to come up with new stuff for these characters. It's like they can't – like, it's either we have these characters fall in love or we don't know what to do with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
I know what you mean.
They have one storyline. And then they have a love storyline. That's basically all they've got for the most part. And if they resolve one of those, they're like, I don't know what to do with this character anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see. The only thing that makes me think that they might set up, I'm not totally convinced that the brother doesn't come back because they were sort of setting up some sort of relationship between him and Charlie. And that could just be, you know, getting you more invested in the character just to make it feel more when you pull him away. I don't know. Part of me does think they will bring him back just because this is clearly the impetus to make Zari Zari again. And that's great. I am on board with her not being, you know, a vapid Instagram girl.
Yeah.
I am pretty done with that version of her. However, I also don't need, you know, I'm doing this for my brother again. Not that, I mean, it's a fine storyline, but we saw that. We saw that to its conclusion, right? We saw from the start to the end, that mission was complete, and I don't need to see that storyline again.
Yeah. Same here.
So, I don't know. I'm holding out hope. I think he might be back, in part because I do think he's a good addition to the crew. And like you said, if they're getting a little stale with stuff, he's the least stale character on the show because he's been around the least.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
So there's not really many comics coming out right now that you talked about. One of the things I've been doing to whittle away the time, it's not a DC game, unfortunately, but Marvel Ultimate Alliance on the Switch is so fun.
You can play as like 50 different Marvel heroes. I've been playing that a ton. It's funny. There was actually at one point a DC version that they sort of tried to do that was similar to that game. In that game, just so you, in case you're curious, you have a team of four characters that you pick, and you basically, it's just a beat 'em, like you just mash on a bunch of enemies. And DC tried to do it and it wasn't good. But I would love to see them try and do a game like that again, because they have obviously a very big roster and they could do something like that too. But anyway, yeah, not DC, but that's been my superhero fix during the during the quarantine.
All right. And for my shout out, I actually have two shout outs. First is check out the episode of Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum with Grant Gustin. And that was pretty interesting. And for my second shout out, I've been reading a comic called ElfQuest, which was an independent comic that started in the late 70s or early 80s, something like that, and went on for a long time. So I've been checking that out. You know, something different from the normal superhero comics I read. So, pretty good series. I've read it before, but it's been a long time. So it was cool to revisit that. And thanks to Angela Pritchett for shouting out about that a few weeks back. Got me interested in rechecking out the series.
That's awesome. I don't know if I mentioned it when she talked about it, but we that's one that we, not the whole series, obviously, because it's huge. But we read a few issues of it in one of my comic book courses for my master's. So definitely a classic series. I second that recommendation.
All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we are going to be talking Green Lantern Season 2, Issue Number 3. That's the only comic we got coming out next week that we talk about. We got Batwoman, we got Supergirl, we got Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow. So at least next week, we're going to have all the CW shows. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.